While Isaac turned away and ran between the humble cottages down the narrow path towards the forge, Robin made his way to the saddler's house to place an order for the stud farm and to thank Will for the gift of Leofric's boots. He found the door standing ajar, so he pushed it open and called out Will's name. Like most of the village cottages, the door opened directly onto the main room of the house, and Robin saw at a glance that it was empty. There was a pot hanging over the fire. The contents had boiled over and were dripping into the embers, hissing and spluttering. Then Robin heard a voice coming from the workshop. He walked straight through and was just about to greet the saddler when the words dried in his mouth. Will had visitors already. Two of Mortimer's bully boys were standing on either side of the saddler, holding him roughly by the arms. In front of them stood Mortimer himself, his hands behind his back, leaning into Will's bleeding face with an unpleasant leer. Will's wife, Heather, stood next to the workbench, frozen with fear and weeping silently. When he heard Robin's footsteps at the door, Mortimer turned his head.
"What have we here? Why, it's brave Sir Robert, the valiant horseman. How's breeding season up at the stud? Are you still letting the stallions do the job, or do you prefer to handle it yourself?" "I was just having a friendly word with the saddler here, wasn't I, Will? Stand him up straight."
Will's body had sagged a little, and Mortimer's cronies dragged him to his feet. He hung between them like a rag doll. Then he moaned softly. Like lightning, Mortimer turned to him again and drove a knee into his groin.
"Shut up. Don't you worry your pretty head, Heather. If he can't manage it tonight, you can always turn to me with confidence."
Robin stood in the doorway and wished that he had chosen another day to come. He felt terrible for Will and Heather, but it was never advisable to get involved in Mortimer's exploits, especially not for him. He was trying to maintain a blank expression when Mortimer looked at him again.
"What are you doing here, anyway?"
"Ordering two saddles, sir."
"Ordering two saddles, sir. Well, I'm afraid you'll have to come back another time."
"Yes, that's what I thought. I'll be off, then."
"Wait, wait, wait. Did I give you permission to leave, you impudent yokel?"
"I thought that's what you wanted, sir."
"Do I remember correctly that you have two cows, Robert?"
"Only one now, sir."
"Oh, really?"
"Yes. I couldn't afford the winter food for two last year, so we had to sell one of them."
"And did you pay for your grazing rights?"
"Of course I did. At Hocktide."
The lease for the farmer's soil and for the use of the village pastures was payable in half-yearly instalments, once after the harvest at Michaelmas and once at Hocktide, the second Tuesday after Easter. Since Agnes and Robin had become livestock owners, the dates applied to them. But it was only threepence each time, and they could afford it.
"You're quite sure you paid?"
"Ask the bailiff. He noted it down."
"That's strange, because I'm sure I didn't find it in the books."
That's possible, Robin thought grimly. Everyone knew the bailiff nursed a grudge against him, which was exactly why Robin didn't take any chances.
"I have witnesses, sir."
"Very well, maybe I overlooked it. But as for Will here, he has only paid half the lease for his land. He tells me he has no more money. He says he doesn't receive enough orders from the stud. But now I'm a little confused, because you've just come to place an order, haven't you? When was the last time you ordered saddles?"
"I don't know, sir. I'd have to check."
"But this year, surely?"
"Probably. But we don't order as much as we used to. Well, since the plague, times have been hard, and if we can't order as much, then Will suffers too. And his 5 acres can't support a family, sir. It's not even good land, and he has to..."
"Stop bleating, you halfwit. This barony has to pay its taxes. Now, how am I supposed to raise them if my people don't meet their obligations? The king won't listen to excuses from me. Not the way my father listens to yours."
"Liar," Robin thought angrily. You could easily pay your taxes if you stopped living beyond your means.
Well, how about it, William Sadler? Will you pay?
I can't.
Mortimer grabbed the saddler by the hair and slammed his head into the table. There was a loud crunch as Will's jaw broke.
Come on, you two. Let's see what cattle he's got. We're wasting our time here.
The two men released their grip on Will. He hit the ground hard and lay still. Mortimer nonchalantly climbed over him and made for the doorway, where Robin still stood.
Oh, get out of my way.
Go on, you fool. Make way for him, whispered the voice of reason in Robin's head. But Robin wasn't listening.
You have no right to take his cattle. If he's in arrears with his lease, it's a matter for the local assembly, not for you.
No right? In my father's absence, I am what's right in Warringham.
What's wrong in Warringham, more like?
Mortimer's smug, complacent demeanour evaporated. He turned red with anger, grabbed Robin by the hair, clawed the other hand into the fabric of his coat, and slammed him back against the wall.
Get out of my way, you filthy little guttersnipe. One of these days, somebody is going to take that insolent tongue of yours and rip it right out. I might even grant myself the pleasure if someone else doesn't beat me to it. Come along, gentlemen.
Mortimer stalked out of the house, followed by his men. Heather rushed to where her husband lay and fell to her knees with a piteous wail.
No!
She stroked the hair away from his blood-drenched face and took his hand in hers.
Oh, God! Oh, God, he's killed him!
No, no, he's unconscious.
Everyone knew that Mortimer had killed a young man last year, although it had supposedly been an accident. In such a case, even a nobleman had to answer questions from the sheriff. Inconvenient questions. After that, he had curbed his excesses for a while at least. But the fear he inspired in Warringham was greater than ever.
You'd better not move him. I'll send Agnes straight over. She'll get him back on his feet. Here. Wash his face.
Blessed Virgin, what's going to happen if they take the cow? I don't have enough milk for the child. What am I going to do?
You must ask Jack Reeve to talk to the steward. Maybe he'll give you the cow back. There's nothing else you can do.
Yes, there is. I can make these two saddles for you. Then at least I can pay some of the arrears.
Robin wasn't surprised to hear this. Many of the craftsmen's wives knew how to turn their hand to their husband's trade. And in the city, there were even women who had learned a trade themselves.
All right. It's a deal.
It was about time you gave us some work again. None of this would have happened if you...
We need at least 10 new saddles, but we just can't afford them.
Nonsense. The stud is rich.
That's all in the past.
All right. Just give me the measurements, Robin, and then take your lies somewhere else.
Robin bit his lip and left, knowing it was Heather's anguish that had made her lash out. Wherever Mortimer went, he left bitterness behind him. If bitterness were an animal, it would appear on Mortimer's coat of arms. As Robin stepped out of the saddler's house, he bumped into Isaac, who had given up waiting at the tavern and come to see what was taking him so long. Robin told him what had happened, and Isaac grew pale.
That bastard.
I know. Come on, Isaac. You'd better go back. It's getting late. I'll go and find Agnes.
No, let's do it the other way around. You go back. I'll find Agnes. I'm going to have to stay anyway, Robin. Heather's my cousin.
Robin had forgotten. Isaac's mother and Heather's mother had been sisters. Almost everyone in Warringham seemed to be related in one way or another, and even after all these years, Robin didn't know all the family ties. He patted his friend's shoulder in agreement. Isaac would find Agnes and take her to the saddlery, and Robin would return to the stud and explain Isaac's absence. Isaac nodded at him gratefully, and turned back to the village with a heavy heart. Robin didn't envy him. Alone now, Robin made his way out of the village and back up the hill towards the stud farm. As he hurried past the gate of the southern paddock, lost in his thoughts, he didn't notice the figure leaning against the fence up ahead, and he almost bumped into her. It took a moment before the penny dropped that his dream had finally come true.
Oh. Why in such a hurry?
I'm so sorry. Please, excuse me.
You're Robert, aren't you?
Yes, madam.
Oh, please. Don't be so formal. I'm told your lineage is far nobler than mine. Look at these. I just picked them. Primroses. Aren't they lovely?
Beautiful.
I'm taking them to my aunt. I thought they might cheer her up.
That's very considerate of you.
I'm afraid they won't help much. That castle. It's like a dungeon. Everything's so dull and heavy. Out here, though, everything is so full of life. And those sweet little foals are just beautiful. How clever of you to hide yourself here.
Robin didn't quite know what she meant, but he decided to take it as a good omen that she shared his preference for the stables and their inhabitants. He couldn't really think of a suitable answer, though. His tongue seemed to be tied and he couldn't stop looking at her. She was adorable. She wore a saffron-coloured surcoat that was laced just below her chest and left little to the imagination. The sleeves of her bright yellow silk cot were so wide that they almost reached to the ground when she let her arms hang down. Robin had never seen sleeves like them. She gazed for a moment across the empty paddock and then looked back at him.
What's the matter with you? You look rather sad. Not as bright and bold as the other day.
Do you always speak so frankly?
No. Only to people who make me feel safe.
Safe from what?
Not from anything. No, I mean people who, I dare to think, look on me with favour.
I do, madam.
Yes, I know. Robert, will you ride out with me tomorrow afternoon and show me around? I got so hopelessly lost yesterday.
It will be my honour.
Then come to the castle, if you find the time.
I will, madam. In the afternoon. As soon as I can.
Alice waved gaily at Robin and strolled away, the basket of primroses swinging back and forth at her side. Robin looked after her until she had disappeared over the hill. He felt enchanted. Did that actually happen? Or was it just another of his daydreams? No, it had to be real. He would never have thought up something as ridiculous as the primroses. It was true. She really wanted him to join her for a ride. Not Mortimer, not one of the young knights of the castle, but him. He walked back towards the stables with his feet barely touching the ground. But as he turned the corner by the feed barn, they came down to earth with a thud.
You're late. And where the hell's Isaac?
Still in the village. And I'm afraid there's a very good reason. Do you want to hear it?
I'm all ears.
Robin told him about Will. Stephen's face darkened, and the sarcastic expression disappeared from his face. He sent Robin off to work with a dismissive gesture. But from then on, things only got worse. Will Sadler, it turned out, was only the first in a long list. By noon the next day, Mortimer and his thugs had beaten up four more men in the village, and another simply disappeared. Mortimer probably had him locked up somewhere in the bowels of the castle and was doing heaven knows what to him in an effort to discover if and where he had buried a bag of pennies. Of course, Mortimer had no right to do that sort of thing either, but there wasn't much to be done about it. The sheriff was far away in Canterbury or elsewhere, and even in the unlikely event that he might take an interest in a peasant's complaint later on, It was always difficult to prove an allegation after the fact. And so, without fear of any consequences, Mortimer carried on terrorizing those who were in arrears with their lease, or who had not been able to pay their fines. He didn't care if the steward had granted them a deferral. He pursued them mercilessly and with reason. Contrary to what he had told Robin with such high sanctimony, this wasn't about taxes. Mortimer needed the money for himself, and he needed it urgently. For a long time he had been running up debts with various moneylenders in Canterbury and Winchester, and the figures involved were far from trivial. Mortimer's lifestyle was expensive, inflation was rampant, and the annual allowance he received from his father vanished into thin air in no time at all. Weapons, horses, the maintenance of his retinue of thugs, all of these added up to a perilous drain on his resources. And all the while, the pressure from his creditors for interest payments became more insistent. One of them had now threatened to denounce him if he didn't provide a guarantee underwritten by the Earl himself. It was this that had brought Mortimer close to outright panic. He couldn't possibly ask his father for help. He had to get his hands on the money somehow, and he didn't care how, as long as it was quick. He desperately needed to settle his financial problems before Geoffrey returned. All of this Mortimer carried within him. No one but Agnes suspected a thing about his crushing financial troubles. They were too busy being terrified of him. It is rare to encounter a person with no saving graces at all. But ever since childhood, Mortimer had been such a one. Behind him lay a dark trail of atrocity, unmitigated by a single act of kindness. But this time, even by his standards, he seemed to have completely lost his mind. The following afternoon he arrived at the stud and demanded that Conrad and Stephen return half of their commissions from the auction. They refused. Conrad actually laughed in his face. Even Mortimer didn't dare raise a hand against such a respected man. So instead he waited until Conrad and Stephen had gone, turned on the first underling who happened to be passing, and beat a full month's pay out of Isaac. This amounted to everything that Isaac owned, and it wasn't all that difficult to get it out of him. Isaac had no personal obligations to the barony, but he surrendered up his life savings before Mortimer started to break his bones. For the time being, at least, Robin didn't know about any of this. He was in a completely different world that afternoon. Straight after lunch, he had left the stud farm with Conrad's permission and ridden up to the castle on Cupid. Alice was ready and waiting. She wore a riding dress of dark green cloth and firm boots laced up to the ankles. Her dark curls hung down in long tresses all the way to her hips. As soon as he caught sight of her, Robin's heart fluttered in his throat. She greeted him, and together they rode out across the drawbridge.
Where would you like to go?
I'm not sure. The lady in waiting told me about a white rock. She said there's a wonderful view across the valley from there. Shall we go there?
As you wish, Lady Alice.
Oh, dear Robert. Now you're looking all grim again, and you're being formal.
Forgive me. If it's your wish, I'd be happy to show you the White Rock. But I think I know an even more beautiful place.
All right, then. Let's go there instead.
All right.
Robin nudged his horse into a light gallop so that Alice wouldn't run away from him. She was an excellent horsewoman. She often rode with the hunt, she told him that afternoon. It was one of her passions. Robin took her through the forest, but before reaching the White Rock, he turned downhill through the trees towards the Medway, which flowed through the forest for many miles. Old willows stood on its banks. The water was wonderfully clear, babbling mysteriously along the stony riverbed. Finally, they emerged into a little clearing carpeted with delightfully springy light green grass. Here they stopped and dismounted. Alice looked around her with her eyes gleaming. The clearing was bordered by hazel and birch. It smelled of moss and warm earth, and the air was filled with the hum of the first bees of spring. Somewhere in the distance, a woodpecker was tapping at a tree.
Oh, Robert, how beautiful.
I'm glad you like it, madam.
Is this an enchanted place, like in the fairy stories? What do you think?
Oh, yes, I'm sure it is.
In the quiet forest air, Robin thought her laughter sounded magical. He tied the horses to a low branch, then sat down next to Alice at a courteous distance. She smiled at him, her eyes half closed.
Do you bring many girls here, Robert?
No, I usually come here alone.
Should I be flattered?
You may take it as you please, madam.
Oh, really? When are you going to stop calling me that?
But it's only proper.
Nonsense. I don't want you to call me madam. Will you please call me Alice?
All right. If you call me Robin...
Is that what they call you? Robin?
Yes.
All right. It's a deal.
Robin leaned back and looked up into the sky. After a few moments, Alice shifted closer to him. He turned his head and saw that in her hand she was holding up a piece of jewellery that hung from a chain around her neck, which had thus far been hidden beneath her dress. She took his hand, pulled it closer, and placed the pendant in his palm. It was an amulet of heavy gold, decorated with a coat of arms that carried the cross of St. George. It hung on a thick, rather coarse gold chain, which seemed more suitable for a man than for a girl's slender neck. He let it go, and it fell back into the hollow between her breasts.
What is it?
It was my father's.
It's very beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
Did he give it to you?
No. He gave it to my mother, and she gave it to me.
Alice?
Do you think we could go hunting tomorrow?
Hunting? What are you thinking of? I'm not even allowed to collect wood in this forest, let alone take a deer. I'm not a nobleman, Alice. It's called hunting when you do it, but it's called poaching when I do it. I'd be hanged if I took so much as a pigeon.
Of course. I forgot. How can you bear it?
Very easily. I've always found hunting repulsive.
What? Why?
Oh, the yapping hounds, the yapping people. What, the whole ritual of it. The slaughter. All that blood. I don't know. It's always just seemed a little crazy to me. And more than a little disgusting.
My goodness. You sound like a real washout.
That's what my big brother used to say.
The sun was shining in Robin's face, and he settled back down and closed his eyes. He tried to memorize this moment in every detail. There was something perfect about it, as though a scene from one of the old stories he loved had become a reality. He knew it couldn't stay this way for long, but at least he could remember it. He concentrated on absorbing the moment. After a while, he opened his eyes with a tinge of regret, propped himself up on his elbows, and for an instant thought that he must have been struck by lightning. She was naked. Her slender, flawless body lay sunlit in the grass. The dark tresses of hair were spread out around her shoulders, emphasizing her lily-white skin. She smiled and stretched out her arms to him.
Come to me.
Alice.
Shh. Come on.
Robin didn't move. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. Until this moment, Alice had been a kind of abstraction to him, a dream. Of course, in his wildest fantasies, he had imagined touching her cool lips with his. But even in the act of imagining it, he had blushed with shame at his boldness. And now here she was, lying before him in the grass, as naked as the day she was born. So much more beautiful than Kate the laundress. And yet, in the end, not so different. He found it sobering, in a strange way almost disappointing, although he was most certainly aroused. His head began to spin, and he wrenched his eyes away.
No, Alice. Please. It's impossible. You should...
Nimble as a cat, she sat up, grabbed his wrist and pulled him closer. Hesitantly, he looked down at her. She was slowly lowering herself back to the ground, running her free hand over one of her firm breasts and down towards her belly. Her eyes were fixed on him, serious, penetrating, hungry. He wouldn't have believed her capable of such a look. He had imagined everything about her to be pure and innocent. But now he realized what a fool he'd been, and decided it was high time he stopped torturing himself. He stood up, his face burning, and clumsily pulled off his clothes. Then he fell to his knees next to her, and gently took her hand away from her chest. In its place he laid his own, large and calloused, and she closed her eyes with a sigh of absolute contentment.
At last. I was beginning to think you didn't want me.
Robin's throat went dry. He did want her, right now, and she knew it. She wriggled and arched herself towards him. He reached out and pulled her closer, sliding one hand beneath her back and running the other through her wild, tumbling curls. She sighed softly again, her eyelids fluttering. They joined together as nature intended, softly at first, until she began to return his gentle movements with her own, growing fiercer and greedier. He bent over her and kissed her mouth, penetrating her with his tongue now as well, hard, fast, and passionate. When it happened for them both, she cried out, unrestrained and triumphant, and Robin felt as if he was being torn to pieces. He collapsed onto her, and they lay together for a while, breathing raggedly. At last he opened his eyes again, trailed a finger through her hair, and looked down at her pensively. She was smiling up at him.
Robin?
Hmm?
Why are you feeling guilty?
I'm not.
No, stay!
Robin pulled away, sat up and looked down at Alice, Lady Alice Perrers, Matilda's niece, Mortimer's cousin. If this ever got out, it would most certainly cost him his life. But that wasn't too bad, because he didn't think it would ever get out. That wasn't the reason for his anxiety.
Are you angry with me?
How could I be?
Then what?
Oh, Alice, I don't know. You're so young and I can never marry you. It's impossible.
So what?
But...
Why are you so determined to spoil everything with all this thinking?
I'm sorry. I really don't mean to.
Come on, let's go.
Yes, in a minute. Alice? Why me?
He hadn't been the first, that much was clear. But it was also obvious that she wasn't easy to get. She had chosen to give him a rare and precious gift, and he was beginning to wonder what debt he might have incurred in return. They sat in silence for a few moments before she gave him his answer.
You and me, Robin, we're two of a kind.
What do you mean by that?
Do you know about my father?
No.
Sir Richard Perrers. At least that's who he used to be, a long time ago. King's Knight, Sheriff of Herefordshire and Essex, an influential, respected man, like your father.
And then?
He had a quarrel with the Abbey of St. Albans. Oh, it was all about land, of course. It usually is, isn't it? My father was in the right, but the king took the side of the abbey. They locked him up, Robin, for years.
And took away his title and his land?
Yes. And then, on my 7th birthday, as it happened, they declared him an outlaw. They didn't even bother to hang him. They just turned him into fair game.
Robin caressed Alice's head. He couldn't say anything. He knew better than most how it felt when the world you knew suddenly fell to pieces, and you were no longer the person you thought you'd been all your life. Alice sat up and leaned her back against his chest. Her face was full of sorrow, but she didn't cry. Robin put his arms around her.
Is he dead now?
Yes. My brother Richard tried to get our title back, but they didn't listen to him.
Your brother Richard is a brave man. I would never have thought of that.
No. Well, you might have been smarter than us. At least you know where you belong. We're nothing. I'm just a beggar, at the mercy of the Queen.
She's helping you?
Queen Philippa has a big heart, yes. She's helping me. I'm one of her ladies-in-waiting at court.
Suddenly things started to fall into place. The girlish coquettishness, but the womanly experience. King Edward's court enjoyed a high reputation, but not when it came to moral probity. Robin began to understand. Feeling a little relieved, he enclosed her body more tightly.
And are you happy at court?
Sometimes. There are good days and bad days. But if I could, I'd do exactly what you've done. Turn my back on the court and the nobility. The way things are, I'm at their mercy.
Whose mercy?
Everyone's. The king, the queen, everyone at court. Through me, they fulfil their Christian duty of mercy. And believe me, they let me know it every single day.
So what's to stop you doing what I did? Do it. Turn your back on them. Stay here. Marry me.
I can't do that. I have to get back what they took from us.
Is it really that important?
Oh, yes. Only when you have money and power can you protect yourself. Only then can you feel safe. And I'm going to get those two things, money and power. And once I've got them, I'm going to take revenge on a few people. On that, you can depend.
Revenge? What would that bring you?
Satisfaction.
And what's that good for?
I don't think I'll know until I get it. Oh, are you disappointed?
No. Just a little wiser.
Will you love me for as long as you can?
For as long as I can. And then a little longer.
Robin got back to the stud just in time for the evening round. He had no intention of pushing Conrad's generosity too far, or this miraculous new chapter in his life would be over when it had barely begun. So he conscientiously went from stable door to stable door, checking up on each of the yearlings and lending a hand here and there. He listened attentively to the grooms, who reported to him which animals had not been eating properly, which were behaving strangely, which were limping. And as always, Robin investigated every irregularity. You could never know what was important and what was trivial until you'd got to the bottom of it. Horses were fragile, complicated creatures. They were precious, too, and not just financially. They were dear to Robin's heart. After finishing his round, he took a quick look at the books, and then it was time for dinner. When he arrived in the kitchen house, Maria and Eleanor were already serving up. Over the years, even Maria had grown tired of scolding Robin over his punctuality. He washed his hands and sat down in his usual place, which was now much nearer to the stove than when he had arrived at the bottom of the pecking order. The company had changed and grown over time. Conrad's sons were now among them, as were the 9 other young boys who lived above the tack room with Isaac. Pete and Bertram were married and lived in the village. Dick and Kit had gone away to war. Robin gazed pensively around the room, at the faces he knew so well. Everything so familiar. And yet today, suddenly, so strange. That afternoon in the clearing by the river somehow felt more real now than this place. He sighed and broke his bread in half, wondering if he was wading into the most dangerous waters of his life. He was brought back to Earth by Eleanor, who was glaring at him disapprovingly.
Robin, if you crumble your bread, it won't fill you up.
Mind your own business, little witch.
I'm just trying to stop you from wasting away. You're so pale and skinny. Ow! Robin, leave my plats alone! Stop it! I hate it when you do that.
I know you do, so don't be so cheeky. I'm already full grown, you know.
Robin had a real soft spot for Eleanor. She was a bright child, humorous and quick-witted. But he knew exactly how to drive her into a rage, and he often did. He was like an older brother. Someday she'd learn that her outbursts of fury only egged him on. It never occurred to him that these days, one of the reasons she got so angry was that she had a different kind of soft spot for him, and his good-natured jokes only served to provide her with daily evidence that he hadn't noticed how much she was growing up.
You can have my bread if you like, Eleanor. You can have my beer too. They say it puts hairs on your chest. There you go.
I'd rather die of thirst. Stop it, you two! Now I've got beer all down me! Leave her alone, Robin, can't you?
I'm sorry. Sorry, Eleanor. Changing the subject, where's Isaac?
Well, if you don't know, who else will?
I'm not exactly your favourite today, Maria, am I?
No, I think you're dreadful.
Yes, where is Isaac? I haven't seen him since... Robin, be a good fellow and have a look around.
All right.
He found Isaac propped up against the trunk of the chestnut tree by the well. In the twilight of the setting sun, his face was deathly pale. He had been bleeding from his left ear and his eyes were dull. Robin felt a cold hand of fear clutch him inside.
Isaac?
Robin?
Who the hell?
Take a guess.
Isaac, we've got to get you. Ah, Leofric. Leofric, go and get Agnes.
Oh, there's no need. I've just got my head kicked in a bit, that's all. Oh, Robin, I don't feel quite right. I think I'm gonna...
No blood in it. Well, that's good anyway. Have a sip of water.
Oh, thank you. But don't send for Agnes. I'll be embarrassed.
But Leofric was already halfway across the monk's head on his way down to the village. Agnes was tired and hungry. All she wanted was to get home, warm up last night's stew, drink a cup of beer, enjoy the sunset, and not have to think about Mortimer for a minute longer. That would be bliss. Just not thinking about him any more. He'd been giving her a hard time lately. He was telling her too many things she'd rather not know. And this evening, he was keeping her out late. She wasn't even on her way home yet. Instead, she was sitting under an old beech tree in the forest, and Mortimer's head was in her lap. Regrettably, it was still attached to the rest of him, and he seemed in no hurry to return to his drinking companions.
Agnes?
Hmm?
Would you like it if I were to become a famous knight? If I was appointed to the Order of the Garter?
Not particularly. I don't care much for heroes.
Rubbish! All girls want a hero.
I don't.
Why not?
Because all that really matters is what's underneath the armour. Knighthood is just a word. A garter doesn't make a man honourable.
Nonsense. Knighthood and honour are the same thing.
Oh, how are you going to become a famous knight anyway? Is there a plan?
I'm going to join the Black Prince on his next campaign. Wherever it may be, I don't care. I want a chance to prove my mettle at last.
Is this for England and King Edward, or just to escape your creditors?
Bit of both, I suppose.
How does your father feel about you going to war? Not to mention your mother.
I'm not going to tell them. I don't need anyone's permission. I'm old enough.
Agnes nodded silently. Then go to war, Mortimer, she thought coldly. Go to war and fall with honour. But do fall. Don't come back. Release us all.
What do you think?
I think you should do it. You're right. It's about time you stood on your own 2 feet.
You could at least pretend you're sad I'm going.
Oh, why should I lie to you, Mortimer? Don't you have enough false friends?
I don't know what you mean.
Oh, you know perfectly well what I mean.
Agnes was referring to the parasites who surrounded Mortimer like wasps on a rotten apple. They were the lice in his hair, drinking and whoring at his expense, and always taking care to laugh at his jokes. Poor, pathetic Mortimer.
Oh, I have to go.
Are you going to wish me luck when I leave?
Oh, you're not leaving yet.
No, not yet.
Over Agnes's shoulder, Mortimer spotted a movement. He reacted with practiced speed. In a single, swift movement, he threw Agnes aside, dragged the intruder out of the undergrowth, and drew his dagger. Agnes felt a hot, heavy sting deep in her stomach. It's finally happened. Someone has found us. They're going to hate me. They're going to hound me out of the village. Mortimer held the uninvited guest by the hair and put the blade to his throat.
What have we here?
Leofric! Oh, let him go, Mortimer. Don't hurt him. He's the one person whose silence we can rely on.
Who is this little squirt?
It's Leofric. He works at the stud. He's mute.
A simpleton?
No, not at all. What's up, Leofric?
What's he doing?
Oh, it's how he speaks. He's trying to tell me something. Lines on the forehead. A scar on the forehead. Isaac! Isaac's been beaten up. Mortimer, what have you done?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Mortimer felt uncomfortable. There was a peculiar, haunting intensity about the facial expressions of the deaf-mute boy. No words could have been more eloquent or more accusing. Agnes knew, of course, that Mortimer was lying. She stood up and checked what she was carrying in the bag at her belt. Then she beckoned to Leofric to come along and left Mortimer where he lay in the forest without a backward glance.